Shalom, this is Alex Israel from Alon Shavuot, and we're going to be talking about Parshat Shoftim, Chamishi, Shishi, and Shavi'i. And these are the Parshiot which deal with battle, with war. Of course, Am Yisrael is poised to conquer Eretz Kanaan and is going to be entering into the land in warfare. And when you look at these parshiot, they form a beautiful structure. If you look at Perek Chaf Pasuk Aleph, Ki Teitzela Melchama Loivecha, when you go out to war against your enemy. And here, what we read about is the draft, the mobilization of the army, and who is exempt from the draft. Who is exempt from the draft? Of course, somebody who has built a house and has not dedicated it. Somebody who has planted a vineyard and not drunken from the wine. Somebody who has engaged a woman, a man who is engaged to a woman, but hasn't yet, he's betrothed to her, but hasn't yet married her. And all of these people are exempt from battle. Why? Why are these people given an exemption? Doesn't seem fair. I'll start building a house and leave it unfinished, just so that I will get an exemption from the draft. However, this is the first parsha, deals with the draft. The second parsha, I might call it, from Pasuk Yud, rules of engagement. Ki tikra v'ir lilachem alecha v'karata alecha l'shalom. When you come against a city to fight it, you should give them the opportunity of peace, and if they answer in peace, then they will serve you, you will take over, you will be in charge. But if they don't answer in peace, then you go to battle. Well, who are you allowed to kill? Just the men, just the fighting men, the women, the children. And here the Torah makes a distinction between the land of Canaan and more distant territories. The Torah continues and continues to a stage where we've mobilized the army, we've come across the city, and the city, we reached out to them in peace, but they rejected our peace offer. And now we enter into the siege, and this is where we have Pasuk Yutet. Ki tatzur al ir yamim rabim, when you besiege a city for many days, and here we encounter the law of Baal Tashchit, that we're not allowed, even though we're bored, in a siege, and we are sitting in enemy territory, just surrounding their village or town, waiting for them to break, waiting for them to run out of food and water. We mustn't destroy the trees or the ecology of the landscape, and rather we must have respect for the fruit-bearing trees and not destroy them. And this obviously becomes an archetype of not destroying in a wanton manner, not wasting anything. This is sort of taken way out of the military context in which it is legislated and broadened by Chazal to any sort of wastage or any sort of unnecessary destruction of useful objects, taking something which could be worthwhile in a civilian context and wasting it is also a violation of Baal Tashrit. And to complete the set of all the battle parshiot, if you look at the beginning of Ki Teitze, we there see Ki Teitze l'melchama l'oivecha u'natano Hashem elokecha biyadecha. Now the siege is over, you've prevailed against the enemy, v'shavita shivyo, and now you find the beautiful captive woman who, now that you've vanquished the enemy, you now have prisoners of war. How do you deal with the prisoners of war? So what we actually see here in Parashat Shoftim is a chronological progression of how to deal with war, starting with mobilization, rules of engagement, a siege situation, and finishing with our victory against our enemies and how to deal with the prisoners of war, specifically the women who are more vulnerable, and maybe some sort of object of desire for the Israelite soldier. So this is giving a sense of shape. I've tried to give a shape to what's happening here, but I would like to say a couple of words of the type of rules the Torah has here. You know, we might imagine that we just go into Canaan, all guns blazing, Hacharein tachrimeim, destroy them, lotachaya kol neshama. But this is far from the case. And the Jewish army is meant to be a different type of army. I raised the question before, why we give exemptions to the person who is in the middle of planting their vineyard, building their house, in the middle of getting married. The Ibn Ezra thinks that the reason why we exempt this type of soldier is because he'll have a sort of conflict. On the one hand, he's meant to be fighting, but he's sort of worried about his beloved or really would like to finish off the wine harvest. And he simply, you know, when his commanding officer tells him to charge, to put himself in a situation of danger, he'll be in two minds, he'll be conflicted. And therefore, it's better not to draft this guy because he'll be a liability. He won't necessarily be willing to go the full 9 yards, the full throttle into battle. And he's always got second thoughts and hesitations. And his hesitations will be infectious and affect his comrades in arms. And we just don't want these people in the army. They'll demoralize the war effort. So the Ibn Ezra is very, very, you know, pragmatic and strategic. But Rashi says something different. And Rashi says, Ogmat nefeshi. It's simply heartbreaking. Heartbreaking to see somebody who's in the middle of building a house and is unable to finish it. Somebody who is engaged to a woman and will never be able to consummate the marriage. And in fact, there is a very good proof that Rashi is correct, because later on in the Tochacha, we read some of the terrible predictions that will happen to the Jewish people. And one of the things which is said there is, and I'll read, it's in Perek Kafchet, Pasuk Lamed, Ishati Areis, a woman will be engaged with Ishasher Yishkavena, and another man will sleep with her. Bait Tivne, he'll build a house, Velote Shevba, he won't ever settle into that house. Kerem Tita, he will plant a vineyard, Velote Chalalena, and will not eat its fruit. In other words, a sense of tragedy is when life is disrupted in the middle of building. And here we see that maybe the Torah is concerned with creating a balance between the war effort and the home front. Almost to say, I know war is part of life and war is a part of every nation. And yet, even when the guns are blazing, life has to carry on. There'll be a day after the battle where we're going to go back home. And we still want there to be young families, and we still want there to be agriculture, and we still want there to be settlement. And therefore, I mean, Chazal apply this to a milchemet reshut, not a milchemet mitzvah. In a milchemet mitzvah, even a chatan leaves from his chuppah, and a kalah michedra. But being that as it may, what we're really saying here, says Rashi and his interpreters, that we need to, even in the middle of war, take care that the civilian side isn't neglected. I feel this continues through this whole series because, of course, the first thing we do when we talk about approaching a foreign city is not to say, you know, get out the battering rams and the cannons, but that we call out to peace. And both the Rambam and the Ramban agree that for any nation, whether it's the nations of Canaan or foreign nations, we always have an option of peace, and we call out to the nation and say, listen, surrender, we're not going to kill anyone, as long as you accept that we're taking over, that we're becoming the government here. You're welcome to stay alive, you have to keep Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, you have to pay taxes to our government, and yet we have no interest in killing anyone. Again, I think this is probably unusual within the context of ancient warfare, but both the Rambam and the Ramban agree that, but even in Eretz Canaan, even for the seven nations, the option of peace is always there. This further ethical concern, and again, we're dealing with war, which is brutal and violent and difficult, however you slice it. But yet, the Torah's concern, Bal Tashrit, for ecology. You know, some nations, they used to literally, I think the Romans used to sow salt into people's field. There was a real, we have this phrase, a scorched earth policy. The idea was to simply, you know, put pressure on the enemy, psychological pressure by them seeing their fields being burnt, and their countryside being completely unsalvageable, and probably the conquering army would simply take out their anger and their boredom on the countryside. Torah says don't do that. Whatever you need to do for the war effort, that you have to do. But fruit trees, you know, they're going to... One day the war's going to be over. What are people going to eat from? Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sazeh. And therefore, try and look after the countryside. Try and have concerns for the day after. And then the Eshet Yifat Torah are many, many ways to interpret it. But one way to interpret it is even some sort of concern for this woman who is going to be taken from the battlefield. Again, we don't have the depth or time to be able to deal with this, but I'll simply say, when you look at the end of the parasha of Eshet Yifat Torah, if you want this woman, you have to make her your wife with full rights, with full legal rights of a wife. You can't have some sort of sex slave who you take back from the war, some sort of woman who you rape over and over again. She is your wife with all of the rights of a Jewish wife. And if you don't want her, right, you're not allowed, im lo chafatzta ba, lo timkorena bekasef, if you're not allowed to sell her, you're not allowed to use her, you have to give her freedom. I think this is, at least at some level, having regard for the personality of this woman and being careful to be mindful of her rights. In the middle of all of this, we have the parasha of Egla Arufa, which deals with a domestic homicide. It's got nothing to do with war, and the question is, of course, why the case of the Egla Arufa, a case of a homicide, in the civilian context, is embedded within all the parashiyot of war. And possibly the answer is obvious. When a nation is at war, life becomes cheap. So many people are dying here and there. So many families are bereaved. One might say, okay, you know what? A stranger walking through the countryside was killed. Okay, you know what? Lots of people die. And the Torah has a whole ceremony to make sure that even while the war effort is going on, our domestic front, the home front, the highways and byways of Eretz Yisrael, the villages and towns, should not be an environment in which life has become cheap. That if one murder happens of some sort of homeless person or what have you, some sort of wayfarer or traveller who gets murdered, you schlep out all of the leaders of the city, all of the local Sanhedrin, all of the city sheriff and the city mayor, and all of the officials, and they have to go through a penance procedure, and they have to investigate what happened to this person. Because even when war is going on, we must keep our ethical antennae sensitive. We must make sure that we do not lose sense of the value of life. And therefore, I think as I look through this segment, which deals with the laws to do with war, I see the Torah at every corner trying to take effort in order to give some sort of calibration, to give some sort of counterbalance to the world of war, and to ensure that there is a whole world of ethics which exists woven into the fabric of war, to make sure that we don't simply get absorbed by the war effort, but we retain our morality throughout. Shabbat Shalom, wishing everybody a very, very good day and a wonderful Shabbat.